Hebrews chapter 11, I guess it was 2 weeks ago when we were studying here together last, we were in verses 8 through 10, which we want to read again as we start tonight, now looking at the example of Abraham, and as we mentioned a couple weeks ago, we have more in Hebrews 11, particularly about Abraham, than we do any other individual that's mentioned in the chapter, which is a chapter about faith. So we would expect to see much about the one that God calls the father of all those who believe. And so spiritually, when we are children of God, then we are children of Abraham also, because we have to have faith in order to please God, as verse 6 teaches us here in Hebrews chapter 11. We can't please God without faith. And when we have faith in God, then we're being like Abraham. What kind of faith did Abraham have? Well, that's what he's describing here, verses 8 through 10. And we've read it before, but let's refresh a little bit and read that again. We have a little bit more to cover in those verses anyway. So, Brother Dave, can you read Hebrews 11, verses 8 through 10 as we begin tonight?
By faith, Abraham, when he was called to go out into the place which he should have to receive for an inheritance, and he went out, not knowing whither he went. By faith he sojourned in the land of promise, as in a strange country, dwelling in tabernacles with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. For he looked for a city which had foundations, whose builder and maker is God.
Okay, so just breaking down verse 8, by faith Abraham. Well, then we have that phrase where he gives an application of it when he was called to go out into a place which he should have to receive for an inheritance. But taking aside for now what's in those commas, what he's applying it to, the bottom line is what he says is by faith Abraham what? Obeyed. By faith Abraham obeyed. So, I mean, this is the key right here. And so he's showing us how he obeyed and in which circumstance he obeyed. Of course, it was in the circumstances. He was doing this this was his life. I mean, that's the point. This was Abraham's life. Now, we have some particular examples from his life that especially demonstrate this as an example, which he points out in, starting in verse 8. Which is the first thing that we are told about him, about Abram, in the Old Testament, when we were given the first read about him. And last time, 2 weeks ago, we went back to Genesis 11 and we looked at those verses that introduce us to Abram and his family. And then chapter 12 then tells us when he was 75 years old, how God called him to leave his land, his family. He originally came from Ur of the Chaldees, and then his family, they moved to Haran. And then from Haran, God commanded him to leave there, leave his kindred, all his family, and to go to the land that God was going to show him, which it was the land of Canaan. He had never been there before, so this was a place that he had not known, hadn't been to. God told him to go there, and he went. And it involved leaving behind his home, his family, all of that. There was a reason for God giving him that commandment, of course. He was separating Abraham. He was separating him to make a nation of him. But as such, that also was separating him from the family that he came from. And there was a reason why God obviously felt that was the best thing for him. What do we know about? And we went back and revisited Joshua 24 last week also. But what do we know about Abraham's family from that? What did religiously, what practice did they engage in? They were worshiping idols. Well, when it came time for Abraham's son, Isaac, to have a wife, they take a wife for him of the people of the land of Canaan. Were there any other righteous ones of Abraham's family, as it turned out? Well, yes, Rebecca was one who, but they had to go back to that land, or he sent his servant back there to find the wife for Isaac, and of course the Lord provided Rebecca. Well, then later, Laban was, and who was Laban? Rebecca's what's that? What's that?
Brother.
Yes. And so Leah and Rachel were his daughters. So the wives of Isaac and Jacob came from that family. But what do you remember? What when Rachel, when they were leaving that land, what did Rachel end up bringing with her? She brought idols. And then that had to be stopped. But you can see even then, there was a reminder of the background that many of his relatives came from. So even when Jacob is bringing Rachel out of there from Laban's household, you can still see there's an issue there. But that's what his family, they worshiped idols. So there was a reason spiritually why God wanted Abraham and his family away from that. Now, would that be an easy thing to do, to go away from and leave your family? I mean, and as he's going to mention, would there have been opportunity for Abraham or for his family to have gone back, left Canaan, to return to where they had come from? Yes. But did Abraham go back? Now, I've always had a lot of respect and admiration for what Ishar and Farah's grandparents did back in the 1960s, because they were from Canada, and so he retired from his job with the city government in Winnipeg, Canada, but Brother J.C. Bailey was trying to recruit Canadian brethren to go to India, because he went there in 1963, and so Canadians, being part of the Commonwealth of Nations, they were allowed to go in as missionaries freely. Americans could not go there and do that at that time. But the Canadian brethren could. So Brother J.C. Bailey was trying to recruit some brethren from Canada to go over to preach the gospel in India. And so he convinced Brother James Johnson, Brother Dennis's father, to do that. But they left Canada in 1965. They'd never been to India before. They left Canada, moved to India, where they'd never been, and then they stayed there without even returning here for a visit for 10 years. And they came back for a visit then, but then they went back. But they ended up spending 20 years there. But, I mean, I just think about that. I mean, to go and leave, you know, to leave a place, to go someplace you've never been like that, that would be very harsh conditions for them. But, and then, I mean, not even going back for a visit for years and years and years. I mean, that's what they had to do, but they were willing to do that for that. But, I mean, that's kind of, I guess, the modern example I think about, but that would be not an easy thing to do, but they did that for the Lord's sake. But Abraham here, God said, go and leave your family. I mean, he's not going back. I mean, that's it. He's leaving them all behind. He's going to a completely strange place where he knows no one, and he's not going back. But God said to do it, so he did it. I mean, how many people would be willing to do that? Well, there's a reason why Abraham's doing that is mentioned so often in Scripture as such an example of obedience. He heard God's word. God told him to go, and he had faith in God from hearing his word, and it was a living faith, and so he obeyed. God, his maker, said, here's what I want you to do, and so he did it. And that's how he lived his life. And that's why he's the example that he is. And so he went out not knowing where he went. And then, verse 9, by that same faith, he sojourned in the land of promise. He was as in a strange country. I mean, he was dwelling in tents with his family, and with Isaac and Jacob. And so they did the same things. I mean, and so Abraham was not alone in this. It was also Isaac and then Jacob. They were the heirs of the promise. But there was a reason why God chose Isaac, and he didn't choose Ishmael. There was a reason why he chose Jacob and not Esau. Could Isaac have said, I don't want any part of this land of Canaan anymore. I want to go back where all the relatives, all the home folks are. And he could have done that. Jacob could have done that. But they didn't. I mean, that faith that was in Abraham was also that unfeigned faith, like the Apostle Paul in 2 Timothy chapter 1 mentions, that was in Timothy, that was first in his mother and Eunice and grandmother Lois. But there was three generations of that unfeigned faith that's mentioned in 2 Timothy 1 in that family. Well, the same thing here. I mean, you had Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, that same unfeigned and obedient faith. They served their God, and they stayed where God wanted them to be, even though they were dwelling in tents there. I mean, when did it become the permanent dwelling place for their descendants? It was Genesis 15 when that great horror of darkness fell upon Abram when he was given that vision, when God again repeated the promises, but also showed him the 400 years of affliction that his descendants would be in that strange land that would be Egypt, and then how they were going to come out of there with great substance when the wickedness of the Amorites was full. But, I mean, it was hundreds of years later before they came out of there, before the land of Canaan was conquered and was their land for God to fulfill that promise. But during the lifetime of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, I mean, it was a land that they dwelt in tabernacles in. Well, why were they willing to go through their whole lives like that? Where they really did not have, it wasn't a permanent land for them. But why would they live their whole lives in that situation?
They believed the promises that God made.
Yes, and then as he says in verse 10, he looked for a city which hath foundations, whose builder and maker is God. They understood that their life here on this earth was very temporary. They understood that their purpose in their existence was to seek and serve God, their Creator, and then ultimately to be with Him one day in eternity. And that's what they were looking to. Were they concerned about the here and the now of this life and what they had or didn't have in this life? And now Abraham became very wealthy in this life, in that land. Did he love those things? And did he love this world? No, that's the point he's making here. I mean, he forsook all of what was in this life. He had one concern, and that was living for and pleasing, doing the will of his God, and ultimately looking for what was coming in eternity to be with him there. Is it by accident when we read Luke 16 when the beggar Lazarus died? And to whose bosom did he go for comfort?
Abraham's.
I mean, of all the ones that God would choose to be in the position to receive the righteous when they leave this world and they leave behind all the afflictions, the trials that have to be borne here, which is so much of what this chapter is about, and when we get to the end of it, and he describes the life of God's children and the affliction that it brings, who better to receive them, to be in that position given by God for to provide that comfort? I mean, it's Abraham. as far as faith, and of course, I mean, Abraham in Luke 16, in that account there, and how he was dealing with both Lazarus and that formerly rich man that ended up on the other side of the Gulf there. But Abraham was still faithfully exercising the responsibilities that God gave him. I mean, God has entrusted him with a very important position right now in paradise, hasn't he? What did Abraham do to win that favor and trust in God that God would choose him for that position? That's what we're reading about. I mean, and what are we striving for? And what do we want God to think of us? And I mean, when we get to the last chapter of the Bible in Revelation 22, we're reading verses 3-5, and when he speaks about the hereafter, I mean, verse 3 says his servants will serve him. Verse 5 says that we will reign with Christ forever and ever. I mean, that's an honored position for God to take mankind, any man, and put any of us in that position as one to reign with his son. Now, is he going to entrust that kind of position to just anyone? To everyone? No. He's going to entrust that position for those who have won his favor and his trust by what they've demonstrated here in this life. I mean, if we've been faithful over in those things that are least, Luke 16, we'll be faithful in that which is much. I mean, that there's that principle. We have to demonstrate obedience and faithfulness here for God to be able to trust us with whatever service he has in store for us in eternity. Well, how much would we like for our God to trust us? A little bit? Or fully, where he would give us a position that would, I mean, we want to rule over 10 cities? I mean, that's a lot of responsibility. I mean, but if we're faithful in what God gives us here, and if we demonstrate through our life that we're willing to endure all the affliction here in this world, that we're not going to love this world, we're not going to love its pleasures, we're not going to turn away from God or his teachings or his commandments in anything through all the temptations of the flesh that we have to face, but we're going to be faithful and diligent and keep his commandments through it all and never turn back. If that's what we demonstrate in this life, then we're going to hear those words, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant." Then he's going to be able to entrust us with that position there. But like we see with Abraham, but that's why this chapter is so important. He's showing us the examples. This is what's possible. By faith, Abraham obeyed. I mean, he gives the example that he does in verses 8 through 10, and there are more coming, as we know. And we even looked at some others last week in Romans 4, James 2, John 8. And as we saw in comparing Romans 4 and John 8, the language in Romans 4 is Abraham is the father of all those who believe. In John 8, he's the father, those who are Abraham's children, do the works of Abraham. So Romans 4... Abraham's children by faith. John 8, we're Abraham's children by doing his works, by obedience. Well, which is it? By faith, Abraham obeyed. By faith, we have to obey. This statement there, by faith, Abraham obeyed, is a description of his life. The same word should be able to put up there, but instead of in blue for Abraham here, what it says, we should be able to have our name inserted right there for that to be an accurate description of us here too. It should be by faith, every one of us, our name should be there that we obey. We obey God by faith, every one of us. That's where we have the opportunity to look at that example to see what to strive for. Also, we can look at ourselves in the mirror. Is that accurate? Or do we have some things we need to change, some things we need to improve? And we do. But that's what we need to be looking at. But this is what we're to strive for, and it's possible, isn't it? I mean, it was possible for Abraham. It is possible for us. We can be his children by having faith and obedience. also. All right, so what kind of affection do we need to have if we're gonna follow that example of Abraham? Well, we're not. It's not like we're all being called to leave our homes and families and go to some place we've never been before. Well, I guess Caleb, you kind of did that, didn't you? That's not something everybody's going to actually do. In fact, but whether we stay in the same place, physical location, or whatever we do, wherever we are in this world, what he teaches in Colossians chapter 3, verses 1 through 3, is the underlying principle anyway. And that's what is involved here with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Colossians 3, verses 1 through 3. Brother Tom, can you read that?
Colossians 3.
1 through 3.
If ye then be risen with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ sitteth on the right hand of God. Set your affection on things above, not on things on the earth. For ye are dead, and your life is hid with Christ in God.
What is the difference between what we're commanded to do right there and what he's describing of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in Hebrews 11, verses 8 through 10? It's the same thing. So we're all, we don't have to be told to go from this location to a different location to do what, to obey what he says in Colossians 3, 1 through 3. We have to have that mind. Our affection has to be on what is above, not on this earth. Our life must consist of only one thing, and that's living for Christ. As far as any other kind of life, we're dead. You know, any independent life that we might have that's apart from living for Christ is over, to be followers of Him, to be risen with Him. So we need to seek those things that are above and have our affection there, not here. Well, that was Abraham, and that was Isaac and Jacob, as he's describing it there. He points out a little bit later here in the book concerning this. Let's look at chapter 13 when he's talking about Christ himself. What was Christ called to do? What was he called to do? He was crucified, and he was crucified outside the city of Jerusalem, outside its walls. And so that's a point that he makes about him in verse 11 of Hebrews chapter 13. God gave the commandment for the bodies of the beast to be burned outside of the camp. Wherefore, he said that Jesus also, that he might sanctify the people with his own blood, suffered without the gate, outside the gates of Jerusalem. So there was a shadow in the commandments of what they were to do with the sacrifices, burning their bodies outside the camp. That was a shadow of what Christ was going to do when he was going to be made a sacrifice outside the gates of Jerusalem. But then verses 13 and 14 brings it home to the point of how that applies to us. So let's read Hebrews 13, verses 13 and 14. So we have to go outside the camp. I mean, that's where he was crucified, outside the gates of the Jerusalem. But I mean, what does it mean we have to go outside the camp? We can't belong to this world. We're in it, but we can't be of it. To go to him, we've got to forsake all of this. We've got to leave the camp. We've got to go outside. We've got to go where he is. And he makes the point there, for here we have no continuing city, but we seek one to come. He's calling on us, to be exactly like Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob and what they did. So he's showing us the kind of faith they had, the kind of heart they had, because we have to have the same. where we're willing to forsake everything so that we're going to go outside the camp to him, to God's Son, to follow him. So we're going to leave it all behind and live for him. And because we're looking for that city to come that was made by, built by God. Which, of course, at the beginning of John 14, what did Jesus say he was? What was going to be part of his work when he left this world? As far as on behalf of his disciples, verses 1 and 2 of John chapter 14. Well, let's go ahead and 1 through 3. John 14, 1 to 3, Brother Trey.
Let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there you may be also.
Whatever dwelling place we have here right now, we're going to be leaving it. How do we feel about that? Well, if we love what's here, then that would be a cause of great sorrow for us, wouldn't it? Revelation 18, when he describes the fall of that Babylon, spiritual Babylon there, in verse 14, he's describing the weeping and the mourning of all the merchants and all those other ones over the fall of that Babylon. Because then they're describing all the things they had that came from there, and all of the wealth, all of those items. But it says that of all those things, they will not be theirs anymore at all. It was over. It's gone. And if that's what we love, I mean, what would be sadder than leaving this world? All that we love is right here, and then we're leaving that behind forever. Because we'll never have it. Whatever we have here, we'll never have that again. We're going to leave it behind. We'll never have it again. We're in a world that's of material things, and we're going to be in an eternity where there are no material things. And if what we love are the material things, how sad would that be to then spend your eternity away from all that you ever loved for the brief time that we were here? That would be so foolish. But we need to have that mind, our affection on the things of above, because we don't have a continuing city here. We have one, as Jesus says there, that he's preparing for us. But our hearts shouldn't be troubled about that. But when we think about that, is there anything here that's going to compare to what that is? That we go to an eternal place prepared for us by the Lord himself. We haven't been there yet. I mean, that's how Hebrews 11 starts. These are things that we've been promised that we haven't actually seen yet. But it's going to require faith on our part from hearing these words, that we're going to believe what he says, and that we're willing to forsake everything in this only world that we've ever known, that we're going to be willing to forsake all of that to seek that one place to come for our eternity that we've never been to or seen yet. But when we read that description, how does that sound? A place prepared by the Lord himself for us that's going to be eternal in duration. You know, we'll never leave there. And we would not want to leave there. But we won't. We don't have to. There's not going to be any tears or the sorrow and all the things that we know of in this life. There's nothing here that is to be compared with there. Well, Abraham and Isaac and Jacob understood that, and so by faith, they sojourned here. Well, and that's the same word that's used to describe what our life on this earth is like as well, as it fits in with all these other passages that we are have been looking at. When he's referring to, well, what does he call us in 1 Peter chapter 2? What's the term that he uses to describe us in this world? Just for example, in 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 9, what kind of a people are we? We are a peculiar people. I mean, what makes us peculiar. Well, we're different from the world. I mean, we're not of the world. That's the point. We are different because we are living for God, not for this world. And so we are peculiar. This is not the place that we are of, unlike the rest of the world. So we're going to stand out as being peculiar from that respect. Well, I mean, chapter 1, 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 17. But Samuel, can you read that? So here's what we're all supposed to do. If we call on the Father, and He's going to judge us by our works, if that's who we're calling upon and who we're seeking, then we need to pass the time of our sojourning here in fear. I mean, that's the same word He used to describe Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. I mean, they were sojourning in the land of promise. I mean, they were sojourners in this earth. Well, we are too. This isn't our home. I mean, we are strangers. We're pilgrims. We're different from the world. We are just passing through this life. This is not where we're of. This is not where our home is. This is just where we are temporarily residing while it's the Lord's will that we be here, so we can learn His will and do it and prepare ourselves for eternity to come. So we have so many scriptures like this that direct us and teach us to follow in the steps of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob in that obedient faith that they had in God. All right, well, let's, of course, it's not just these guys. We're going to read about Sarah in verses 11 and 12. So this is the first of the women of the Bible that's mentioned in this chapter. Hebrews 11, verses 11 and 12. If we can go over there, Brother Michael, can you read that?
Through faith, also Sarah herself conceived strength, conceived seed, and was delivered of a child when she was past age, because she judged it faithful who had promised. Therefore sprang there even of one, and him as good as dead, so many as the stars of the sky in multitude, and as the sand which is by the sea, sure and innumerable.
What was Abraham's initial reaction when God told him that he was going to have a son by Sarah the following year? He laughed. In the next chapter, when Sarah was told the same thing, what was her initial reaction? She laughed too. She denied that she did, but she did. But that was the first response of both of them. However, past that initial reaction, as they contemplated what God said, did they keep laughing, or did they believe it? They believed it. And that's Romans 4. That was what we looked at, many of the verses there in Romans 4 that hones in on that particular example of faith of Abraham, that he didn't stagger at God's promise through unbelief. I mean, he wasn't considering his body or that of the age and condition of his body or of his wife. When God said that they were going to have a child, God said it, he believed it. But he wasn't the only one. I mean, that's what it says right here. Through faith, Sarah herself received strength to conceive seed. He wasn't giving a child to Abraham through a woman that lacked faith. There's a reason why he chose Isaac to be the heir of the promise, the son of Sarah, the free woman, and that's used as an allegory in Galatians 4. Not the son of the bondwoman, Hagar, that was Ishmael. I mean, there was a difference in the two sons that Abraham had there. I mean, Ishmael and Isaac, were they the same in heart? No, Ishmael was what kind of man? He was a wild man. Was Hagar the same in heart as Sarah? No, they were not the same. And this is showing that it wasn't just Abraham's faith in that promise of God for a son, but Sarah had the same faith in that promise. he's connecting here God's willingness to provide that son for them because of not just Abraham's faith, but Sarah's. I mean, how else could it be that through faith that she received strength to conceive seed and delivered of a child when she was past age? And he says it was because she judged him faithful who had promised. Would God have been willing to give the child through Sarah if Sarah hadn't believed? Not according to that. So God was rewarding the faith of both of them. And that's why Sarah is given as an example of faith here also. So Abraham and his son and grandson, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, but it's also Sarah. And that's why Sarah in 1 Peter 3, Christian women are given, just as we are all children of Abraham by faith, all Christian women are daughters of Sarah spiritually. According to 1 Peter 3, if Christian women are, if they're following God as they should, then they spiritually are also children or daughters of Sarah by her faith. Abraham and Sarah, they're right there together as far as their faith in God, and he's giving Sarah as an example here too. So she received strength. Of course, that was from God to conceive seed, and she was delivered of a child when she was past age because she judged him faithful who had promised. She, when God said that he was going to do that with her, she believed it. And she believed he was faithful, that he was going to keep his promise. She had a remarkable faith in God like her husband did. And so, therefore, verse 12 says, sprang there even of one and him as good as dead, so many as the stars of the sky in multitude and as the sand which is by the seashore innumerable. Well, those are, that was the promise that God made to them. Not just that they were going to have a child, which that's referring to Isaac, but then through Isaac, which came through Jacob, what was going to ultimately happen then? How great would it, it would have been amazing for Abraham and Sarah to have had Isaac, just that alone. But if they'd had their son Isaac, and then Isaac had died young, died childless, and they had no posterity beyond that, that would have been an amazing thing that they had that son and at the age they did. But how great would that have been compared to what actually happened when that son himself had a son who begat 12 sons, and then from there, there was that an entire nation that resulted through this, like the sand on the seashore and the stars in the sky in number. Last year, sometime, the last time I was traveling out in the western part of the United States, and I know some others here have been out that way, very different than here, especially in our modern times. And I remember Shar pointing out the relevance, how, you know, that promise that God made about the stars in the sky. With all the light pollution we have around here, if we were given such a promise, we might not think that's such a great thing. It's like, well, you look up there and see three or four stars. We don't see a lot, you know, with all the lights we have around, we look up there, we don't really see what's really there. You get out in some area where there's not all the cities and the lights around, it's very different, isn't it, if you've ever experienced that. It's overwhelming just how you look up, and it's just like nothing but stars. That's really all you see. It's just so many. It's so vast. But, when you see that, it really makes it, what you see in the sky is what you see on the seashore as far as the number of stars compared to the sand. It looks different. Like, walk outside right now, that doesn't look like what we see on the beach there as far as the sand when we look up here, but it's there, and it is, it's kin to it. So that, and that's what he did, and that's what he's pointing out, but he fulfilled that. But when he told them they were going to have this son, he that was as part of the overall promise. going to make their descendants a nation in multitude like this. Now, did they live to see that? Well, they lived to see Isaac, of course. But did they live to see the fulfillment of that as far as the number of descendants they had? They were long gone when that happened. But did they believe it? Did they believe it was going to happen? Fully. Because God said, and they judged him faithful who'd promised. So they believed it, that they were going to have their son Isaac, that they did, and they saw that. But they also knew that God was going to fulfill the rest of that, which he did. But he mentions there in verse 13, these all died in faith. And so he's talking there about whom? Well, he's already mentioned by name four of this family, beginning in verse 8. Abraham in verse 8, and then Isaac and Jacob in verse 9, and then Sarah in verse 11. And of course, we know that Isaac was given his wife, Rebekah. 1 Peter 3 talks about those holy women. It wasn't just Sarah, but God gave holy and righteous women to Isaac and Jacob. But all of them, I mean, all of those examples we have there. Does he name every by name? Does he call by name every one of these good examples here in Hebrews 11 that we have? No, and of course he's going to mention that a little bit later in the chapter even, that there's not enough time or space for him to recount the entire Bible right here in this chapter. So he gives a lot of them by name, reminds us of those as part of our great cloud of witnesses. But that great cloud of witnesses, we have to go back and read all of God's Word to have all of them, which is what we need to do. But he's reminding us of many of these. But even with that language, he starts verse 13 with, he's summing up all of those righteous ones that were in this one family. Let's go ahead and read 13 through 16. Very similar to what we saw in verses 8 through 10, but he's applying it to all of them here. Brother Jan?
These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, and were persuaded of them, and embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For they did say such things very plainly, that they seek a country. And truly, if they had been mindful of that country from whence they came out, they might have had an opportunity to have returned. But now, desire a better country, that is in heaven. Wherefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared for them a city.
So by faith Abraham obeyed, and so did Isaac and Jacob, Sarah, and all those other ones in the family that he's speaking about there. And they all died in faith. So that is really it wasn't just a faith that they had for a while. It wasn't just obedience that they showed for a while. It was through their lives until when they left this world. And so they died in that faith. They still possessed that faith at the time of their death. And as we mentioned, they had not received the promises. Well, I mean, Abraham and Sarah had received the promise of Isaac. But as far as the number of descendants they would have, they didn't see that. And as far as that nation that was going to be made of them, inheriting for their own that land of Canaan that they were sojourning in at the time, they didn't see that. And bringing in Jesus Christ, God's Son, through those descendants by whom all the nations of the earth would be blessed, a prophecy ultimately of the coming of Christ and of the establishment of his everlasting covenant, Christianity. I mean, that was part of what God promised to them too. They did not see that in their lifetime. I mean, those were things God promised. But they lived their lives believing that God was going to fulfill all of it, and even having not seen it. And this is how we started the chapter, because there are many things that we ourselves have not seen the fulfillment of that we've been promised. But what must we have and die in as well about those things that God has promised to us? We have to have that same kind of faith. Without it, are we going to be willing to endure the afflictions, the sufferings that we have to in this life? It's going to require that we trust God and we believe that he's faithful who has promised, that he's that he's going to raise us from the dead. I mean, we haven't seen paradise, and we have not seen heaven itself. We haven't seen what's to come. I mean, all we've ever seen are people in this world. That's all we have personal experience or knowledge of. But we believe that when we know we're going to die, and we believe that that there's an eternal part of us that's going to go on to into the next life and into eternity. Not because that we've experienced it or that we've seen it with our own eyes, but we know what God has taught us. And we know what he's promised us, and we believe that. We believe it to the point that we're willing to live and die in that faith. Well, that's what we must have, and that's being children of Abraham when we have faith like that. Because that's what he did. So we die not having received those promises, and we do see many of them afar off. But are we persuaded of them like he was? Do we embrace them? And do we confess that we are strangers and pilgrims on this earth while we are embracing and being persuaded of those promises of what is to come? We must. That's what he's teaching us. Now, for them to say that and for us to say the same thing, that is a plain declaration that we're seeking a country, not here. And then as far as they were, he mentions that they might have had opportunity. If their mind was on where the place that they left, if that's what they loved, they might have had an opportunity to go back. But it wasn't. They were looking for what is to come. They desired a better country, a heavenly one. And it's for that reason that God is not ashamed to be called their God, because he's prepared for them a city. Now, what's the condition there for God not being ashamed to call us his children and call himself our God? That we have that kind of faith. That we embrace his promises, that we seek him, those things that are above, and that we forsake all that's here by our faith in him, being persuaded that he will keep his promises by his faithfulness. Then he's willing to call himself our God and not be ashamed to call us his children. We've got to have that kind of faith, though. All right, well, we're going to stop here for tonight, and Lord willing, next time we will continue there. Verse 17 is going to give another example of Abraham's faith with what he commanded to be done with Isaac, when that son of the promise and the one by whom God had made all those promises about the great nation he was going to make of them, and then he tells them when Isaac was still a lad to go and sacrifice him. Well, how is God going to be, how is he going to keep all those promises if Abraham kills the very one that God promised all those things through? Well, God told him to do it, and Abraham obeyed. But we can read more about that faith. Whatever God told him to do, Abraham believed and trusted God and obeyed whatever he told him. And there, he's going to give us that example too. So, Lord willing, we'll look at that our next time.